to the skies very high.
Hello and welcome to Talking PPG Radio. My name is Will Jones. The following information is not for training, but personal experiences and reflections on the world of power paragliding as I know. All guests of Talking PPG Radio have formed their own ideas, thoughts, and opinions on the world of power paragliding. They are not necessarily the thoughts or opinions of Talking PPG Radio. You may agree or disagree to what you hear. Talking PPG Radio is here to get conversations, thoughts, ideas about the world of power paragliding. Safety first. I highly recommend a qualified instructor. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy. Hello and welcome back to Talking PPG Radio. Will Jones here. Well, yes, I'm back. Sorry that I'm the only person once again that you're listening to, but hey, just me. But I'd like to thank the people that have been listening. If you have any ideas, thoughts, questions, like to come on once again. I swear this is not like going to the dentist if you want to talk. Very laid back. Everything can be edited. Please get in touch with me. Instructor, website, somebody that has something they'd like to talk about. Get in touch with me. As a PPG'er, everybody loves information. And that's what this is all about. So I was going to do the MacGyver Minutes on this episode. There's no way. It's going to be too long to put it on a interview episode. So I'm probably going to do a separate podcast on the comm helmet. So hang in there. I'm going to get to it, I promise you. I'm putting together a YouTube spot. And it's all about time. I have for you today John Black. Talk to him if you remember about the Panama City Beach Blast fly-in 2009, May 7th through the 10th. When I first talked to him, he didn't have a location. He has a location now. Got a chance to talk to him, matter of fact, yesterday. You have to go to www.edgewaterbeachresort.com. Check out this place. It is unbelievable. If you are not there May 7th through the 10th, you are going to be hating life. It is beautiful. Google Earth it. If you go to the big list, go ahead and put in message 55080. That's where John, he actually posted more information or some more information on the location. And I'd like to thank him for coming back on and giving me some more time about the beach blast. Barry Miller also have on this episode. One of the guys I wanted to talk to, being a new guy when I first got into it, you're looking for information, you find the big list, you read the post on the big list, you think about posting, and you don't because, man, you ask yourself, is that a stupid question? Well, Barry was one of those guys that I would pay attention to in his replies, because most of the time he replied, it was like, wow, okay. He knew, found out, or if he didn't know, he would find out, and his replies were darn good. I mean, man, so I wanted to talk to him, and so I called him, and here we talked. So I'd like to thank Barry for coming on. Guys, I got more stuff, more shows already lined up, already really cut, ready to go. This is going really good. I may go ahead and do more. Website, YouTube, spot. Thank y'all for listening. Will Jones talking PPG Radio.
Well, John, welcome back. Got on the PPG big list and saw that the location has been settled. So how you doing, man?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm actually in one of the condos on the beach side on Panama City Beach at beautiful Edgewater Beach Resort. And it's an incredible place. Beautiful, beautiful rooms. And I'm looking out. I'm actually laying in the bed now. And they have two big windows, large windows that go from floor to ceiling on the beach side of these bedrooms and also in the living room. And I can lay here in the bed and just look right out over the big, huge pool, 11,500 square foot freeform pool,
oh.
Largest one of its kind in the United States. Kind of a tropical garden look down there. There's still drums down there playing now, and people are down having drinks and relaxing and talking. And
You're,
you can see the beach right on the other side, and it's terrible, Will.
You're hating life. I can tell.
Hate life.
Well, I'm just going to say it dropped back down to 30 to 28 lows here in Louisville today. So,
goodness.
And if I got on
terrible, it was a terrible 76 degrees out here today.
I went to the
6 mile an hour wind off the Gulf.
Oh wow! Oh, dreaming. I'm dreaming. Can't wait. So, all right. What did it? Okay, what was the final decision? What? Reading the list here, you had 17 bids, and why these guys?
We had 17 formal proposals. We had other bids that were verbal bids.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I narrowed those 17 after going over them. It took me about 8 or 9 hours to go over all of the bids and look them and read them through. The next day I revisited those and trimmed them to 5, and I went back and there were things that I still wanted.
Yeah.
And I asked for everything I wanted. And almost without exception, Edgewater Beach Resort gave me everything I wanted.
Wow.
And they became the front runner early, and they just came through for us. They really did.
Yeah.
They're treating this like a first-class event, and they're excited about it. Their entire staff is excited about it. And honestly, Panama City Beach is excited all the way from the mayor down. I have met with all the officials in this town. And this is my hometown,
yeah.
And all of the Tourist Development Council, and they've been behind this. And that's kind of a rarity in our sport.
Yeah.
We normally have to beg and plead, and this is definitely a major change. And I hope it's a change that draws a line in the sand and starts more of a respect for this sport. And I think it can.
That's excellent. Yeah, I was talking to you over the weekend, and you've been there since Monday? Is that getting all of
I've
this
I've been there since Monday. I flew in. I was just on the phone so much last week.
Yeah.
After the ball really got rolling, and I was on the phone 10 to 12 hours a day, just talking with different resorts and people. And Saturday afternoon, I just decided, you know, I need to just go down there. So I bought a plane ticket. And Monday morning at 1:15 a.m., I went to Denver and hopped a plane and flew down here, got in at 7:22 in the morning. At 8 o'clock, I was in a meeting at Edgewater.
Wow.
So they jumped on it real quick. They wanted me to come, and they just happened to hit me about the time I hit the airport. And it turned out the first place that I went ended up being where we ultimately ended back up after going down the entire beach and meeting with many, many, many people that were very gracious, by the way.
That is great, man. Yeah, I was looking on Google Earth, and it's like, wow, that's amazing. A lot of things going on there. They have a golf course. They got, just reading some of the stuff.
36-hole championship golf course.
Oh, okay.
On property.
Yeah.
It's a 110-acre complex, and there is something for everyone. Your family, your wife will love you if you bring her here, or your girlfriend. Or in the case of the ladies, your husband or your boyfriend, they will love you for bringing them here.
That is it. Bowling, shopping, movie, theater, all of these things are on site? Am I reading that correctly?
It's on site, and that's just a few of the things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very huge complex. Like I told you, I am in Tower 1. There are actually 5 towers.
Oh, really?
Just being one tower. There are 5 towers on the beach side, and then on, they have their own bridge across the road, so you can walk across the bridge, across the road. You don't have to walk. You don't even have to leave the complex. It's from complex to complex. And there are the golf villas and tennis villas are on the other side. There's many, many, many more rooms back over there. And there's a lake over there with a fountain, and then the golf course is there. And then right across beside that is a large shopping area that is also part of Edgewater Beach Resort. The shops at Edgewater, and there's a movie theater, and there's a couple of small bars, and there's a couple of restaurants in there.
Okay.
And then at the resort on the beach side, there's several restaurants and little bars and tiki bars, and there's just something to do all the way around. Yeah. On the beach, they've got everything. Wave runners, parasails, You name it, it's out there. So there's going to be something for everybody. And if you get tired of flying, you know, tired of that 13 hours a day you can fly, there's so many other things you can do. Fishing, we have world-class fishing here, diving, scuba diving, just anything you can imagine to do with the water or sports, you can do here.
That's right. I was looking at Google Earth, and guys, go Google Earth and put in their address, and you will see their whole complex. It's amazing. I did not realize that it was actually going across the road there, and you see the golf course and all the shopping stuff you just right. talked about. It that's amazing. I mean, absolutely amazing. Looks like we got a great room rate. I'm not quite sure what the actual rates are. During you
way
know a non-event, yeah, I can if I'm reading it, because I've got on their website, guys. You got to go to the Edgewater Beach Resort. There's a lot of information there on what they offer and everything. And it's like, wait a minute, it's like one bedroom, two, three. Like you said, you have a living room area there on the beach side. I only can imagine what it is not having the beach blast room rate. So. That's great. Now, we were talking earlier or over the weekend about some of the things you actually got them that you really asked for, like the guys with RVs and stuff like that. Were you still able to get that?
We were. They normally don't. This is normally something they do not do, is allow RVs on property, and we're going to have a limited number, but we are going to be able to have RVs and the trailers and stuff on property. Mm-hmm. They have a big convention center over behind the golf villas over there.
Okay.
And they have a 2,000-seat convention center, very nice convention center. And we're going to be setting up over there, self-contained motorhome. They do not have hookups because normally this isn't allowed, but it was allowed for us.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of exceptions that were for us because of the buzz that was up and down the beach about this event. I went in a lot of places that people know me from being in business here, and it was, "Hi, Captain Black, how are you doing? I heard about Beach Blast."
Oh, wow.
And it's just well known, and if you see how big this place is and how large a tourist destination it is, that's just incredible. So I'm real happy about that, and I'm happy that my hometown has embraced the Beach Blast.
Stepped up,
and anybody that comes, you cannot help but have the most fantastic time you can imagine.
Yeah. Now, the setup, is it going to be, let's see, on the beach, or are you thinking about, like, the vendors, or are they going to have an opportunity to be on the beach, or are y'all going to try to put it, like, the convention area? You thought, yeah, I don't know if you got
into
more
details. Yeah, we're going to have that. The vendors are going to be at the convention area.
Okay.
All of our flying, of course, we will have our own. They're going to rope off the beach down there for us to where we have a very, very, very large place to fly from.
Okay.
And it's going to be dedicated. So we won't have to worry about any foot traffic or anything going by, and it'll be there for us. That's something that never happens either.
Yeah, I can't imagine them blocking that off. That's amazing.
Well, they're not going to completely block to where nobody can go by.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll have to go by up around the building.
Oh, okay. All right.
So there won't be anything blocked completely, but blocked to the water.
Okay. Now, I didn't. I guess I should have asked you the last time. Are you needing, like, maybe guys volunteering to help you out safety wise?
So much help with this. We need experienced people that will, and especially my beach guys, the guys that know about the beach and know how to fly the beach. It's a little different. You have water out there, and from a safety standpoint, I need guys that are familiar with that and guys that have been launch directors. We're going to have launch directors. We're going to have two launch directors for takeoffs, and we're going to have two launch directors for landing.
Mm.
And the reason for this is if anybody happens to mess up and just blow their launch or whatever and they decide they're going to try to make it anyway, and they don't make it, and they go splashing the surf right there, we just pull them out.
Okay.
You know, it's shallow for a good little ways right there, so, you know, it's not a big deal as far as a safety issue or anything, but we're gonna take every precaution on this.
That's excellent. I can't wait. Said you, his winter wonderland is killing me. So, well,
it looks like snow on our beach here, but it's really just sand.
Sand.
And it's beautiful sand, and it doesn't get you dirty, and it is incredible. And I flew in and landed right there behind the pool.
Okay. In the pictures. Yeah.
When I made the announcement. And there were a lot of people out there and just really interested in it. And there were, in fact, several people that rebooked rooms for May 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th to come back and watch us.
Oh, wow.
So he told me there were several rooms that were already booked.
Yeah.
We already have, and I haven't even put up the registration page, which is one thing I'm working on now,
okay.
Registration for the event. And he already has 11 for the beach blast booked.
Oh, wow.
Since 2 o'clock.
Since 2 o'clock when you first posted it, huh? Wow.
11.
Okay.
So that's impressive.
Yeah. Okay. It looks like the room rates are running from $99 to $149. You have to make sure you put tell them that you are beach blast 2009 room rate. And,
right.
Guys, it looks like 3 days before and 3 days after this rate is good, if I'm reading this correctly.
That is correct.
And are they, okay, what about the even the more budget, you know, super budget guy? Is there things around there that you may have checked on for
there? There are some other places that you know, are a little cheaper.
Yeah.
So if you need that, I encourage you to stay on site for the reason of this, and that's, it gives us a little more clout,
mm-hmm.
and lets them know, yeah, we're going to be here and we're going to support our host. But if you do need, you know, a place off-site, there are some other places
okay.
that are, you know, a little less expensive down the beach. But if you're going to be on-site, this is just, you know, for $119 for a Gulf Front one-bedroom, and these are really nice.
Yeah.
I'm in one right now.
Yeah.
I'm actually in one of the two bedrooms, and... They're very nice. The one bedroom, I believe, will sleep 4, and the two bedroom will sleep 6.
Okay. Well, guys, get some of your friends together if you are in a budget pinch, which everybody is these days. But it looks like it's going to be. I mean, it is. It looks like a beautiful place. Google Map, that is, and going to their website, you can do a tour, video tour of the place. Like I said, you can get a whole lot of information on the Edgewater Beach Resort. You just go to their website. So, well, anything else that we need to, you know, that you'd like to tell us about, the guys probably need to know.
Well, Will, we honestly could stay on here all night and just
yeah.
discuss the things that are going on, and they're really embracing this. Like I
yeah.
said, I'm grateful to Edgewater Beach Resort. They're a first class operation on this beach. They're used to handling large conventions and things that are going to grow, and they have a good history of being able to spot those type of events. And they have taken us as one of those events that they believe will just become a monster, honestly.
Yeah.
And they're advertising around the southeast for this event. They are booking this resort with people that want to come watch this.
Oh,
and
that's great.
The amount of rooms that they have out there available to do that with is just massive. So you may have a lot of people, and all of those towers there you see filled with people watching this event. You might want to get your rooms quickly.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it's one of the most beautiful places you'll ever fly, and it's one of the most versatile places as far as entertainment. You won't run out of things to do here.
All right. Okay. Well, excellent, man. Nice job, great job, actually.
Thank you.
Yeah, that if anybody's like, I am big time excited about it. So. Well, John, thank you very much, man. I'm going to get this right out there so people can
kind of chew on it some more and go ahead and book the rooms and everything. I'm going to book mine definitely tomorrow. So, excellent. Thank you much for coming back on and telling us. I guess we said you were working on the registration. Where are you going to post it at? I guess I should ask you that. Are you going to put it on the big list?
I will have a website, and it'll also be on, I'll put it on the big list where it's going to be at and all the rest of the list. And also, I'm going to give this information to Jeff Goyne for the USPPA site and for his site. And we're going to spread it out. It'll be very easy to find.
Okay.
And that should be up in the next day or two, and people can start getting registered. And make your reservations, because they, like I said, they are going to push this event. And if what we saw today was an indication of their clientele that, you know, likes this type of thing, and they're going to promote it, and they think it's going to draw a lot of excitement.
Yeah.
So you're going to get to perform in front of a lot of people.
Oh.
Today, probably in an hour, I probably flew in front of 5,000 people.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay. That's great. That is cool. Any show-offs out there, there you go. So, but hey, thanks a lot. Get this right out there, and looking forward to it.
Okay, guys. John Black there. Make sure you go and check out Edgewater Beach Resort. Get your reservations in as soon as you can. Absolutely beautiful place. Like I said, Google Map it. And I'll also go on their website. Up next, Barry Miller. And thank you once again, John, for coming on. Thank you for listening. Talking PPG Radio, Will Jones.
Hello, and welcome back to Talking PPG Radio. This is Will speaking again. On the line with me today is Barry Miller. How are you doing today, sir?
Doing pretty good. A little bit worn out, but doing pretty good.
Doing good. All right. What happened? What's going on? How you say wore out? Did you get to fly today, or?
Yes. I guess we originally had this radio call in at 9 o'clock this morning.
Yeah.
And about 8 o'clock, I got a phone call from Texas EquiSearch. They were looking for people about a mile and a half down the road from me for a search. The weather was marginal, and I went out there to see whether or not I could fly, and basically, they had a kayaker that had overturned the night before that had not come back up to the surface.
Oh,
so they were searching the coastline for them. So it wasn't going to be a happy outcome.
Oh, that's sorry to hear that. Daggone. Any luck? Did y'all have any luck finding them today? Or?
There was no sightings or anything showing up on them, and the wind was blowing one direction. So if he'd been a little bit on the surface during the nighttime, he could have blown into the lake, this lake area that I flew around, but the tide and the lower currents, if he was more on the bottom of the lake part, could have swept him out into a larger lake that dumps out into the bay and then out into the Gulf. So,
jeez,
so
that is how much area did you have to search? Or
I believe the lake I searched is part of what we call Armand Bayou, and it's probably 50 acres or more in size, and probably with all the little fingers or peninsulas that jut up in it, other areas. I probably had 7-8 miles of coastline.
Was it just you today, or did you have some there?
Well, there's one other pilot that he hasn't actually earned his wings, but he'd seen a posting where I had made right before I went out.
Went out.
And he'd actually showed up there just to help out.
Oh, okay.
We needed assistance. One of those cases where it was, by the time I got there, it was 8:30 in the morning, and typically thermal activity, you had to be down by 9:30, so you didn't have a big window to operate from.
So the weather actually cooperated for you just enough to get about an hour or so in, I guess.
Yeah, just enough.
Yeah.
It was 12-mile-an-hour winds. And
oh, wow.
Fortunately, they weren't gusting, but the terrain left a lot to be desired, and you couldn't fly low, but basically you were looking for arms or legs that were along the shoreline.
Yeah.
That's the only opportunity.
Only looking for
to see anything.
Wow, man, that's a wake up, thinking of coffee and getting a phone call like that, man? It's like, are you immediately at the door, or are you do you actually post, or you call people, call some of the other guys? I don't know how many you have that actually are or would be up in the air at a time some with you. You said the one guy didn't know his wings.
We've got in the Houston area well over 100 pilots. And we've got maybe a half a dozen of us that are very active and to go out and search. And I just happen to have two neighbors that live basically just down the street from me, but they're not up at that time of the morning.
They probably saying, "Are you crazy? It's the weekend. Go back to sleep, man."
Yeah, that's right. But I did place one call after I made a posting there.
Mm-hmm.
For those diehards that need to get an air fix,
yeah,
nobody was coming out.
Coming out, yeah. It's funny because I actually went on right before I called and stuff, and I was pulled up the because I'm a part of the search and rescue on the big list there, and I was like, huh. Wait a minute, and I looked at what time it was, and I was like, wait a minute, I'm calculating, that's about the time. About that time, I gave you a call, and it's like, and I guess I talked to your wife, and she said, no, he's already out. I was like, I was wondering, because I saw where he had posted, like something was going on, so, and that's when I left you a message on your cell phone, so it's like, well, I'll try to give him a buzz later, but wow, that's most unfortunate with that guy, that gun, or girl, or...
Yeah. I just want to bring up, I guess when you'd call this morning, I spoke to my wife, and I said something to her later this evening when I got back in. She said, oh, yeah, some guy called. I mean, he had a very clear voice. He should be on radio.
Okay. Well, tell her thank you very much. That's great. Oh.
But yeah, this was a kayaker. He had went out. He'd only been in the area for about a year, and I guess this particular weekend he was going to do some kayaking, and his wife had flown to Kansas.
Oh, man.
And he went out in a kayak, and apparently his friends had previously told him, had been on his case about wearing a life jacket, a life jacket, and he had it with him, but not on him. Somebody had actually seen him floundering in the water. It was driving over a bridge. It's right near NASA.
Oh, wow.
And they got another kayak to go out there to him, but he was already slipped under the water.
Probably, like you say, kind of the undertow or whatever may have taken him out, or current, or wind. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, this water is really what they call brackish water,
which
is a mixture of salt water and fresh water. And
Okay.
So it's not the best water. I mean, it's just what you have when you're on the coast.
Yeah.
Wow. But you can have some freshwater species that can barely tolerate the salinity of the water, and then you got saltwater species that'll come up in it as well.
A little bit of everything. Wow. Well, I tell you what, I guess we just jump right into it. I guess I should say, some people probably have seen your name on the big list and probably know you from some of the fly-ins and stuff like that, but I was going to try to see if you can't give a little information on yourself, how long you've been flying and exactly where you find it. We didn't even go over that. We just started talking. So just if you can give the listeners a little information about yourself, let them know who you are.
Well, I started flying, I guess, about 4.5 years ago.
Okay.
I was actually at another site that we frequently fly now, and saw this one pilot come over my head while I was out there fishing one day, and I've always wanted to fly, and it's like, that's got to be cheap enough that I can do. It took about 4 months for me to find out what the sport was really called.
Oh.
And then when I had finally... I think I showed my daughter some pictures, and she said, "Oh, Dad, there's people over here near the area swimming pool that take off out of their backyard."
Oh, wow.
Now you tell me.
trying to track it down.
And then it turned out to discover, I started finding out more. It's like having to go to these places out west or Florida or up east. And
it
turned out, lo and behold, Andy McGavin was an instructor here in the area. The only instructor at the time in Texas. So.
Yeah.
That worked out quite well. I've probably got a neighborhood of probably at least 800 hours in the air now. When I go out to fly,
mm-hmm.
go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, because I think I've talked to you briefly a few times, and you were going out flying, just got done flying, or you know, it's like, daggone, they flies a lot. Man, that bike's here, man, you know, I live in Louisville, and this is cold, and there's wind and gust and stuff, so I'm jealous. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I mean, when I go out to fly, I mean, I'll launch, and everybody else, there's a few pilots that'll follow me on some of the longer flights if they ask where I'm going. But, I mean, I'll go up and I'll take offline for a couple hours before I come back, whereas a lot of the other pilots seem to, they'll stick right around the LZ area,
mm-hmm.
maybe 30 minutes, come in, land, chat for a few minutes, and go back mm-hmm. up. But they get a lot more launches, but they're a little bit less adventuresome.
Yeah, that's what I like to do. More of the cross country up for a while. Usually when I go up, I'm probably up more, you know, at least more than an hour, if possible. You know, I like that. That's touch and goes and all that. Okay, that's nice, but I want to get up and fly and see the scenery and stuff. So, yeah, that's same here.
Go ahead.
So, where are you located at? You're in Houston, or what are your where are you actually located at?
I'm in the southeast part of Houston, which is just down the road, actually, from NASA.
Okay.
Probably about 2 miles away from NASA.
Wow.
And if you had been watching Ike when mm-hmm. TV crews were going down what they were calling NASA Road and just past the Hilton, that's the area where I was at and where I live.
Where you live at? Wow.
And, I mean, I've got flying today. I've flown over another area. Found me a jet ski out there. I don't think I can ever get to it to recover it, but there's a jet ski that's unclaimed.
It'll be
in good shape.
Really? Oh, wow. Was it when you say you couldn't get to it, was it just marshy, just in a covered up, or?
Oh, it's not quite covered up, but it's probably 50 feet pushed up on shore, and it's in an area where people are not going to be walking, or
yeah.
the only way you're going to see it and find it is from the air.
Air, yeah. No place to land.
I mean, in fact, you couldn't even land there. I mean, it's if I did land, I would not get back out.
Okay. So it would basically have to start up for you or be able to get it back to the water. Wow.
Yeah, you'd have to tow it. I'm sure it's got to have some minor repairs after this long being out of the water. But
do you fly with Andy much?
Andy and I mean, generally the weekends is when we catch up.
Yeah.
I mean, I help him. When he's got one or more students, I'll get out there and work with him on the wing handling while he's working on the final parts of before they get launched. And sometimes, depending upon the student, if a student needs two people working with them to help make sure they do what they need to do on a forward launch or inflation, mm-hmm. that they get the right amount of guidance and don't stumble or something like that. That's worked out into a pretty good relationship. I mean, I set up my web store that I've got.
Yes, I was going to go ahead and give you your web address there.
I've got two websites. One is for our club, and that's txwingnuts.com.
Okay.
We call ourselves the Texas Wingnuts, but the store is uswingnuts.com. And
it looks like
that is not. I don't teach.
You don't
here.
Teach.
I mean, I help,
okay.
help Andy assist.
Okay.
You're
not an instructor.
I help Andy assist, but I don't teach individuals on my own at
okay.
this point in time.
You're not an instructor, or you're not a rated instructor? Is that what it is?
I'm a PPG-3 pilot right now, and
okay.
actually I'm going to be going through the USPA instructor rating clinic here in
Charles.
May.
Yeah, Britton Charles?
Britton Charles.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask you about that.
I'm going to go ahead and get those credentials, and the way the economy is, you never know what may happen from one moment to the next.
Right,
that there will be opportunities if something goes sour with my employment.
I understand.
Hopefully won't happen.
Anything. Yeah, I know what you mean. Anything to have right there in your, you know, your bag of tricks to help to get you along, without a doubt. You're exactly right. Yeah. I was looking at your whips, the U.S. Wing Nuts. You sell a little bit of everything, it looks like, there.
Yep. I carry PAP, as far as boaters, I carry PAP,
yeah.
Fly Products, Fresh Breeze, HE material, their engines, the iFlyer, which Andy set up that he's using mm-hmm. with some of the HE motors.
Yeah.
Did have Cobra PPG, but they're doing their distributor organization on that at the moment.
I even have
Bailey, so.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sporting just, I mean, if somebody calls me up,
yeah.
there's no one piece of equipment that I'm pointing somebody specifically at it. Yeah. Like, all right, tell me about yourself, mm-hmm. and where you live, and what you can and can't do maintenance-wise, and then I'll point you in the directions that are good choices and point mm-hmm. you away from things that are bad choices based upon what you tell me.
Like their size and weight and, I guess, you say size, weight, altitude, exactly where they're at and stuff, I guess, is their...
Yeah. I mean that plays so much important role. I mean, you see some people say you got to have this motor and don't know anything about the individual. And,
mm-hmm.
You can have a unit that's very underpowered or you can have a unit very overpowered.
Yes.
Both of them are, especially depending upon where the person's flying, could be very unsafe for them. So,
mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, then I carry a wide range of wings as well, depending upon, I mean, there are some people that are going to, young and a little bit cocky, that might get out there and like to carve it up as soon as they start get through their training, while you have some that are want to just be a boat up in the air, or maybe a cruise ship and just go on there for the
bum-ba-dee-da, bum-ba-dee-da, yeah. That's great.
But then you got other people that are in more mountainous areas that may want to have something, say, reflex technology mm-hmm. that provides some stability in the air that they may not otherwise have.
So you got APCO, Dudak, JoJo, MacPair, Ozone, and WinTech is what it looks like you're showing. So, yeah, you do have a wide variety there. Wow. Ooh, hey, you got the new Eden 4. Have you tried that yet? You already got it posted up, don't you?
I haven't tried the Eden 4 yet.
No?
Andy got the Eden 4 in about two and a half weeks ago, and as soon as he got it in, he took off to Moe's at the Flying Circus.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah.
I believe actually the Eden 4 he got in is a little bit small for me, so I need actually a 30, and I think he has something a little bit smaller. So I got to wait until he has a demo that's at my size.
What's your wing and motor of choice? You know,
right,
or what are you
flying
right now? Yeah.
Oh, right now I'm flying an Eden 3
mm-hmm.
With the Fresh Breeze Seminini.
Seminini. Okay, that's what I have, a Seminini.
What I would like to have is a 4-stroke that's got enough power for my weight.
Oh.
And they haven't come out with that yet.
That one, yeah. Yeah, I guess that Bailey's is not... It doesn't even have the same power as your Seminini, does it? I don't think it does.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
It's short on that. I've heard of some 175-pound pilots that are comfortable with the climb, but I'm another 55, 60 pounds on top of that.
Mm.
And, I mean, I could go to a larger wing and maybe get the climb, but...
So you're about, what, 230?
About 230, 235,
yeah, 235.
Depending upon how big a steak it was, I ate.
Okay. Yeah, see, I'm 225 to about 230. Just mostly, I hover around in there. Keep saying I want to lose some weight to get down so I can get more performance out of, you know, that better climb and stuff. But, boy, you like you said, depend on what I put in front of me that day. So, what about you? When the, what is it, Ike or whatever came through and tore up everything, you guys still, your original flying site, or did y'all have to move, or?
Actually, three of our flying sites got trashed big time. Probably the more popular site that we go to, or that we end up with, is a place we call the Texas City Levee, or
that,
Dyke.
I could not think of the name of it. Okay, Texas City Levee.
And,
okay.
I mean, it is a levee that runs along the Galveston Bay, and we have probably 4 to 5 miles of anywhere from about a 75 to 150-foot wide strip of grass that's mowed, perfectly manicured, that was going up through there. It made an excellent training place, especially when the winds were coming out of a particular direction, because you could launch somebody straight up to shoreline and still have, where the winds were just coming just barely off the water.
Yeah.
And have some very good flying and very stable air.
Wow.
And when the Ike came in, it left a debris field. In some places was 4 and 5 foot tall of cane, planks, parts of houses.
Oh, my God.
Water heaters. Anything that was demolished, I mean, just a little bit north of the area was what they called Bolivar Peninsula, that I think it lost over 3,000 homes.
Oh, my gosh.
Parts of those had made it over to our area.
Yeah. So is that no longer now, or that's...
We have it now, but they cleaned that up. I think we got access back to that sometime in maybe the first part of December.
Wow.
I came through in October. They actually got FEMA funded the cleanup on that, which we were fortunate.
Yeah, I would figure they wouldn't even touch it, but I guess it was such a mess, huh?
That particular area was the big fishing area for much of Houston.
Oh, okay.
So they had incentives to try to drive that. And it was, there's still a dike that extends, it's the world's longest man-made dike that extended almost 5 miles out into the Galveston Bay.
Wow.
That was provided a buffer for these oil tankers that come into one of the chemical plants right next to us.
Hmm.
That dike, it served its purpose, but it will be lucky to be reopened in the next year.
Oh.
But that was our safe spot for landing when we did a longer cross-country flight. We'd fly out of there over to a place called Bolivar Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
You tell a lot of people that you're going to do a two-mile water crossing, they're going to think you're nuts.
Two-mile. Wow, okay. Yeah, I probably will go, okay. Life preserver.
yes, a life preserver, some pilots wear.
Yeah.
It's not as bad as one pictures after you see the situation. You've got this the dike that runs out there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's got a road down through there with a beach on one side and a fishing area on the other.
Yeah.
And it's, for the most part, it's pretty easy to land on. And what we do, we take off, when we leave our LZ, we take off flying out it, full throttle climbing, and by the time we get down to the end of the dike, we're somewhere around 4,000
feet altitude.
Oh, okay.
Altitude. Yeah.
And at that point in time, we've actually got three different places that we can land. We can still land on the dike, and or we can start the water crossing over to Bolivar, which is just a hair over 2 miles, mm-hmm. or we can actually turn about 90 degrees and head over to Galveston.
Okay.
If we should encounter a motor problem.
Problem.
So, I mean, you climb over, and then once you're over there, then you start dropping the altitude. You can get on the Gulf side of the peninsula and then cruise down a beach over there.
Man, you guys sound like you've got great places to fly. Well, that's great.
We do.
Yeah.
We do. And then we have a couple other places there on Galveston Island, East and West Beach. And West Beach is where we held our fly-in, Halloween of 08.
Mm-hmm.
So that worked out well.
Yeah.
Camping out there on the beach. And we're going to do the same thing this year.
Okay.
About 2 weeks after the Monument Valley fly-in, which is a week before.
You gonna make it to
Halloween?
You gonna make it to the Monument Valley?
Several of us are planning on going. I have my sights set on that. That is going to be a long drive.
Yes, that's same here. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's at least 1,500 miles.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make a little bit of a vacation with the wife and that trip.
Yeah.
And then, fortunately, they're scheduling that 2 weeks away from our flying, so I'll at least have some recovery time.
Yeah.
Before I get...
Yeah, I'm going to try to talk to them about that, so the Monument Valley fly-in. A lot of people probably don't know that you are... you told me you were one of the moderators for the Big List. How'd you get into doing that?
I'm trying to remember when I got involved. I guess I've been in at least 2 years.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of... I'll use the word unrest at the time.
Unrest.
And I guess my post, I'd make posts being for the most part neutral. I try to use that word.
Yeah.
With situations, and
mm-hmm.
several people have seen it. And Jeff Goen asked me if I step up and be a moderator. They needed more help.
Yeah. Well, that's what I told you when I first got in touch with you. I was telling you, I was like, out of all the people that I've noticed that would come back. They would actually come back with an answer, not a smart remark, it was almost like well thought out. And a lot of the times you post, I'll sit there and I'll read it because I figure, you know what, he probably really sat there and thought about it, really knows, or if he don't know, he probably tried to get some information to find out. And that's the way I look at it when I do see your post. It's like, wow, okay. You know, and a lot of times you'll get oh man, why even say that? You know, just a person's asking for help, you're just gonna, you know, slam them like that. So yeah, I could see that definitely when you post. So yeah, I pay attention a lot of times when you post or after somebody asks a question, because it's like he knew that and thought that, you know, that's what goes through my mind. So go ahead.
Well, I mean, I don't have the aeronautical physics behind it like a couple of the other members of the group have.
But yeah.
I am a chemist by trade, and I got a science as a background, and
yeah.
A lot of times, a lot of problems can be solved with common sense if people will think it out far enough.
Right.
I mean, I've seen so many times, I'll be out doing something flying, it's like, I wonder if anybody has really ever thought about this. This is a question that just makes you think for a minute for the answer, and it's like, and if it's one of those moments pops in my mind, it seems like somebody else can learn. I'll post a note out there. It's like, has anybody else seen this or think about this when if you're having these difficulties?
Mm-hmm.
I've had a number of people like write me back. A lot of times, private says, I had that same problem.
Right.
I mean, I try to be helpful and.
Oh, you are. You definitely are. There's no doubt about it.
I mean, there's individuals that's always going to create unrest on a group.
Uh-uh. I haven't seen one of those. No. I haven't seen one of those
in the last...
see, when was the last time I was on there? Yes, exactly.
I haven't seen one of those in the last 23 hours.
Uh-huh. Exactly. See, there's four of you. Is that? I didn't know it was four. I thought it was just you. You told me there was actually a total four of you.
Bill Kerr, Phil Clark. See the other name, but I can't remember which one it is.
Okay.
That's on there. And plus, I think there's four owners of the group. The owners of the group are basically just like the moderators.
Mm-hmm.
The owners set the rules, and the moderators uphold those rules.
Uphold the rules, right.
And occasionally it's like you get into gray area. You have to seek advice when something's not too clear, and just to make sure everybody's got a common consensus on it.
Right, yeah.
And everything works out pretty good.
Well, it's just most time. I mean, it's not bad. I mean, you have those moments or whatever where, you know, that's like, what was that, a couple of weeks ago when they were talking about the ratings. Man, it was going in like 100 different directions. It was like, whoa, people. You know, but it was all civil. It was all, you know, they were expressing their views, you know, civilly, you know, and it was like, okay.
That origination post I started, though.
No. Yes.
Because, I mean, I had two fly-ins I was wanting to go to this year.
Yeah.
That was Britton Shaw, because I had a fabulous time there last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I went on a cross-country, over a 20-mile one-way cross-country before I turned around and came back, and I had a blast flying up this river valley.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I wanted to go back up there and do it again this year.
Yeah.
And was thinking about doing the instructor clinic as well, and I was asking Britt, I was trying to make sure he was going to confirm the date on it, because it was still in question marks on the youth group. It's like, yeah, he was going to have it. He was trying to keep the head count down because he couldn't. It got too big last year for him.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I was on the road last year on the Thursday before that weekend to get up for Thursday evening to start flying Friday, and I'd already gotten some phone calls. It's like they already had too many people.
Oh, really? You were still on your way.
And, yeah,
and it wasn't really supposed to officially start till Friday, and you were going Thursday, and they were already packed by then.
Yeah, I mean we ended up still getting a prime spot only because I had a truck that I didn't mind driving over a mound of dirt.
But, yeah.
There was a lot of people already there. We set up camp, but I know they were struggling with the numbers because of the landowners there.
Yeah.
I guess we're probably expecting another group of maybe 50 or so, and it turned out to be already 50 by the time we got there.
Yeah. Yeah, I it's funny because you posted that, and I was going to post my talk with him. I was like, oh, man, and it just went crazy. I was like, wow, just about ratings and stuff. It amazed me how everybody actually, the good and the bad and the ugly, I guess, they think about the ratings. So it still baffles me that's like I told Britton. I said, Britton, it seems like the guys that are 3 years and more really have a problem with it, and where myself, I've only been in it for a year, and I'm thinking, well, it ain't no big deal. I mean, I guess it, you know. So hopefully it won't scare too many people away. So,
well, I mean, I look at it as another way. I mean, I started actually two ways. I mean, when USPA first came out with, like, get your ratings, get paid for it.
Yes.
And it's like, all right, I'm already there.
Yeah.
It's now it's just go through and step through the syllabus, make sure everything was covered. And,
yeah.
I mean, my skills had been demonstrated time after time. I'd already been to one clinic, had done some other maneuvers, and it's like, I'm there.
Yes.
And it's like, all right, send the paperwork in. I got my I got money. The other driver for it was, I mean, I almost went to the PPG to PG clinic last year, but I don't think it, I know 2 years ago they had it.
Yes.
Last year I didn't see it taking place, but where you could go from a powered paragliding rating over to a paragliding rating.
Yes.
And I had a strong desire in doing that to at least get my P2. I don't think I've done a lot of flying, but there's probably, I know there's still a number of things I can learn before I'd be ready for a P3.
Yeah.
But I felt pretty comfortable with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of joked with him about, you know, last time I remember turning my motor off, it wasn't intentional, you know, so, and we kind of laughed about that, because I know he said he's actually going to offer it, I guess, again this year, so the chance of getting your P2 is there. I don't know if it's set like the same deal what he was talking about, you know, where you can just show your credentials or whatever like that, and a lot of the requirements would be kind of thrown out, and, you know.
Well, I know that in order to do the, pilot's PPG3 rated has got the hours and probably has demonstrated all the skills. He's probably just to get a P2, probably about the limit that he's probably got left is a little bit more knowledge on the aspect of paragliding.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've been towed up to about close to 3,000 feet on a tow rope for paragliding.
Whoa.
And that is, I mean, Chris Santa Croce took me up on that.
Oh, okay.
For a clinic. That aspect, actually being towed up, was a little bit unnerving. And
yeah.
If you haven't ever been, it was not being in a harness, what an issue with that. It was more of this tow bridle that they have. You can just, I guess some of the shock waves, when it's boats pulling, you can hear it.
Oh,
it's just,
really?
All I can say is it's just a little bit unnerving.
Unnerving. Turn your music up? What?
Well, I would have felt a lot more comfortable just running off of a side of a mountain, a sheer cliff in front of me, but
yeah.
That wasn't an opportunity.
Yeah. Now he's supposed to be down at the Panama Beach fly-in with John Black that's having in May, which I'm going to go down to. I already got the time off, so he's supposed to be doing a clinic down there. So I don't know if I'm going to do that, but I can see it being a little bit unnerving, you know, just... Wow! Yeah, I could see that, and something about.
I mean, it was a clinic. I mean, I learned a lot.
Yeah.
It changed some of the way I do things as far as flying.
Yeah.
And I mean, he was one individual that there's no question that you respect what he says. It's
really
gospel from him.
Really.
He's been doing it so long, and I mean, it was just amazing to sit there and watch him have somebody 3,000 feet up overhead, and he'd tell them to. All right, pull your A riser down and to take a tuck on your or a asymmetric collapse on your wing.
Yeah.
And I mean, and he's looking straight up 3,000 feet. He says, "Oh, you didn't pull down enough. Pull down another 3 inches." And I mean, he knew exactly what you were doing, what you were feeling the whole time that you were up there. I mean, you felt
well worth going through it.
Yeah, I mean, anybody can get into a clinic. Should, especially with Chris.
Oh, well, that's cool. Well, I tell you what, last thing I talked to you about is your search and rescue. We kind of went through what you did this morning or whatever like that. Now, was it a month or so ago? I know you had posted you had a poll. I guess that was you that put up about if anybody was interested in search and rescue. And of course, it sounds great. And then next thing I know here, a couple weeks ago, it was like, hey, a group. And what got you guys into search and rescue? And how long y'all been doing it?
Well, I guess we've actually had, I shouldn't really call it a search. We've had one rescue. I shouldn't call it a search and rescue. Because
okay.
4 years ago, we were involved with, we'd set up on one of our West Beach in Galveston.
Yeah.
We actually had some powered parachute folks that normally never come out. You don't ever see them because they fly in other parts of Houston. were out on the beach, and we'd take off. We were off doing our thing, and he'd come back, and we're back on the ground, and as they're coming back up, and one guy got into a spiral, and actually he had went down offshore, probably about 250, 300 yards offshore.
Yeah.
And when I was finally made aware of it, we were at least 100 yards offshore at that time, I mean, away from the shoreline. Saw his unit out there, and it's like, oh, crap, we got a pilot out in the water. At first, we thought we saw his head. It turned out to be one of the tires on the PPC. A couple of guys had already started getting out of their equipment. Myself, I was already ready to launch. I saw people running the other way, so I had to unhook my gear. I was the last one to four of us to enter the water, and we went out there. Fortunately, he was on a sandbar, because if he'd been out on the next sandbar, we couldn't have probably rescued him.
Oh, wow.
But when he went into the water, he had flipped upside down.
Yeah.
And had been under there for several minutes. And when we flipped him over, he was still strapped in. He turned out that in an inverted position, his harness would not release, so he couldn't get out of it.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And he had turned blue and gave him a couple of rescue breaths. Apparently, his heart was still beating, so we didn't have to initiate chest compressions. As soon as we did that, he started coughing up water.
Yeah.
And then the four of us, one supporting, or I guess two of us working with his arms and neck, because we didn't know if he had a neck injury.
Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, he didn't have a neck injury, because trying to get through all that water and the wave action he had, it would not have been pretty.
But yeah.
We got him back in, laid him on his side, and he continued coughing up water. It took 30 minutes to get to for the ambulance and fire department to get there, but they were not expecting somebody to be still breathing when they got there.
Wow, man.
But, he was saved today, and then couldn't have been more. It was the next weekend, right after that, I was flying in another spot and flying along near a highway. Lo and behold, a van pulls over, pulls the passenger out, lays her down on the side of the road. And, I know something's going on that's not good, so I land there in this field, and a couple other cars had stopped and started. And they had already called 911 by the time I got on the ground. Ambulance there was just a few minutes, but I think she had a drug issue.
Oh, okay. All right. On that one.
But
yeah.
Really the big kicker was, I mean, every time I go to look in the paper, the places where we'd fly,
yeah,
it was always like either a day before or a day after, wherever we'd been flying, they were finding bodies. I knew I counted early last summer where we'd been flying, places that we'd been flying, eight bodies had turned up.
Really? Drowned or, well?
Drowned, murdered, washed ashore.
Wow.
And, I mean, it's like we were just on the brink of a number of finds. And I knew several times, I've told people, it's really just going to be a matter of time before we do find somebody, because we're just happened to be in an area that's prone to water accidents. And
I don't know, eight bodies. I don't know if I want to go flying with you guys.
They're not our people. Our people come back.
No, it's like, wait a minute here. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So we had actually, I think three or four of us had went on and signed up with a group called Texas EquiSearch.
Uh-huh.
They're the big local search and rescue group. Actually, they call them search and recovery. Typically, they're not rescuing, but they've actually had two rescues here in the last month where they've actually saved somebody that would have otherwise had not survived.
Yeah.
And it couldn't have been more than a month after we'd signed up for EquiSearch, and we got our first call out on a place where we could fly down the coastline. And we covered, I think, probably close to 50 miles of coastline.
Oh, wow.
That day.
How long have you been signed up with them?
Been signed up officially now for about a year.
About a year? Okay.
With EquiSearch. And I told them, we can't fly. If you're looking for something during the middle of the day, we can't help you.
Right.
And, I mean, a lot of their searches make a call, and they're on an automated phone line where they alert all the search members. And those will typically look for something late morning, something like that, because, I mean, they got the police department that's called them in, so it's very difficult to know that you're going to be doing a search
right.
So you can get set up for a 7 o'clock search pattern or something like that. Because we don't have to be out of the air in this area here by 9:30, 10 o'clock at the absolute latest if there's any sun out there.
Yeah.
Searched for a missing boater, and it covered, I know, 50 miles of the coastline, but and it went this one particular direction that was really a prime area. And it turned out he'd surfaced almost 100 miles down the shore. He was that far away.
Wow. And that's just from being the current and all that, I guess.
The current along the Gulf Coast there continues to sweep them down there toward the Mexico border.
Wow.
So it's like this guy had been off far enough offshore that it took him that far before he got pulled into the shore.
Wow.
Whereas if he'd floated out the river, and he would have come up on shore closer. But we've been on two similar searches. Like, I haven't been on both of them. One pilot's been on two of those searches. We've done another search around a lake here near one of our LZs for looking for what was thought to be somebody that had been dumped. And then this morning, and actually I was looking for a pilot that initially people thought was me.
What?
This was about 3 weeks before Ike hit. I was going to work one morning, and it was about 7:45 in the morning, and I'm thinking, it's like, those clouds are leaving. It's probably it wouldn't have been a bad morning to be flying in now that they're leaving.
Right.
Well, it turned out that about 7:30, just east of where I worked, they had seen somebody with a wing over their head go into the bay, and it turned out I am the only pilot that I know that has flown that area in the last 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And everybody else knew that as well in our group. So I had a bunch of phone calls on my cell phone, which was sitting out in my truck. It was not until mid-afternoon that I had discovered I had a bunch of phone calls.
Oh, yeah, everybody worried. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, I'm safe. So we started checking to see any other locals or anybody else that we knew. And Texas Air Search had been called out on that one.
Oh, wow.
And they were running sonar out in one spot where a couple witnesses. They had over 8 witnesses spread across about 3 different miles that had seen this person go into the water. And, I mean, this person was never found, and to this date, we don't know if it was a PPC, a PPG from somebody out of town, or a skydiver, or, I mean, it could have been even a PPC that just happened to have been flying low over the water the whole way, but, I mean, there was never any evidence. Coast Guard did a search.
Really? Never surfaced or turned up.
Never surfaced. And, I mean, it was 3 weeks after that's when I hit, so that changed the whole situation out there in the bay. But nope, nothing ever turned up and recreated the flight pattern, except flying at high enough altitude, so if I had a motor problem, I'd get back to land.
Yeah.
For the searchers to try to get a better pinpoint from a couple of the witnesses, which actually pushed their search grid another mile further away from where they were initially looking. Well, the thought was that, which actually in that case pushed the guy pretty close to the what they call the Houston Ship Channel, which suddenly turns the water from 8 foot deep and 35 to 40 foot deep.
Yeah, it's they couldn't tell if it was a trike or. Yeah, I guess that's the biggest thing is when people are not familiar with what actually they're seeing. It's hard to really get a good description of what they actually see. They probably just saw the wing. That makes you wonder.
They just saw it. I mean, there had some people saying it had wheels. Some people said it didn't.
No.
Some people say it was a square chute. Some people that were saying it was elliptical.
Yeah.
I don't know that anybody said it was a round one, but it's like there were too many options there and tried to looking for the person, but no luck on that one.
Now, just to tell everybody, if they go to the TX Wing Nuts website, you actually have a pretty cool little slideshow PowerPoint deal. It's under Search and Rescue on the left-hand side down the column there. I was looking at it this morning, and I was like, that kind of details if you're trying to put together a group. Really a good detail information on what you guys actually do, you know, carrying day supply stuff and just in case you go down in a search pattern and the communication stuff. So guys, if y'all want to get more detail on that and thinking about doing something like that, I would go to the TX Wing Nuts website and look at the search and rescue PowerPoint thing. Did you put that together?
Oh, the search and rescue, yeah, I put that. That search and rescue link actually was an article that I sent in to Ultra Flight magazine that was posted back September, October, I think, time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And
you got a link to Ultraflight there too, don't you? Yeah.
About 2-3 weeks ago, I created the PPG Search and Rescue.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some documents together, trying to put the program together. I mean, there's a lot of information that still needs to be put in the document, and
this
is where I'm trying to pick up volunteers that will help write some things. People that have more experience than myself. I'm by far, I mean, I've got a little bit of experience, but there's a lot of other people in the group that I actually have participated in some search and rescue and recovery operations a lot more. I'm sure can add some more valuable experience.
That's because on the big list, I see where you had uploaded some stuff that you wanted people to look at and give you some feedback on it, if I recall reading that. Yeah.
I mean, what I'd like to see is a PPG search and rescue or recovery.
Recovery,
that's exactly
right.
How we're going to call that. When some organization needs somebody to come look, they can go to, say, like a contact at USPA, as an example. And then it's like if USPA has members that are willing to search and rescue in that vicinity, then put them in contact with that particular group to assist.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's no reason for a Texas pilot to go to Illinois to look for somebody when there's plenty of Illinois pilots up there that I'm sure that would love to get involved in some searches.
Yeah. That's a good idea. It's a great idea.
And I know that Scott Adair had just participated on a search here in the last couple of weeks.
I talked to him down in Florida. Yes, Florida guy.
He bounces between Florida and up someplace up real far northeast.
Oh, okay.
So it depends upon where you are.
Where is it? I guess time of year, season.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I know he's got that thing going on down there this weekend. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And I think the Route 66 group has actually got a really pretty formal process set up for their group. It seems to be working.
That's the guys in AZ?
Michelle
Danielle and those guys. Yes. See, I think that's where I may have first heard about search and rescue, search and recovery, or whatever like that, from those guys. I didn't know if you guys actually had a part, or you guys kind of got together, or what? I know you said what do you call it? The Equisearch.
Equisearch. E Q U. S E A R C H.
Equisearch. Okay.
Started off as an equestrian search group. The founder lost his daughter. And they had done some extensive searching, and I guess they were in the field of with horses and equestrian.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they started doing a lot of horseback riding for searches and stuff. And now that seems involved into boats and four-wheelers and now powered paragliders.
And that's a nationwide, that's turning into a nationwide thing.
It's, they seem to go nationwide when they're called at NASC.
Okay.
I know they took off on a Florida trip here this past week and a half. I think they may still be out there.
Yeah.
There's a missing girl out there right now that's a big headline in the news.
Yeah. Okay.
But they're, I mean, just about every month they're going someplace. I mean, they've even been to Aruba
with
a case down there of the missing person.
Yeah.
But they got a pretty strong foundation there to work from with a lot of volunteers.
A lot of volunteers, right. Well, that is really cool. Yeah, and as soon as I saw that, you know, I jumped on it as far as trying to join the group and stuff like that when that poll came out and everything. And it's like, hey, that's a really good idea because, like you said, there is if you can actually get in, like you said, contact with USPA and then whatever area there's a contact in that area and being able to call up guys at a moment's notice or whatever like that, that's a heck of an idea. I mean, that's one more search tool that they could use, you know. So
yeah. And I know I've been I know EquiSearch went someplace up Arizona, Nevada, someplace like there. And I had posted a note, like, hey, they were headed up there to do a search, and it turns out to be an area where some of the pilots there were familiar with the area.
Yeah.
A lot of times it seems like the terrain that they want to explore is not the best terrain for a pilot.
Pilot, yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes you have to just say, all right, I can't do this. I mean, there's been a number of times, even here locally, that I would have liked to have done some searches when the conditions have been good, but they were in either restricted airspace, typically in restricted airspace.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the direct city of Houston is covered by two airports,
yeah.
So we have to be very careful.
Very careful.
About that.
Yeah. Well, cool. All right. Shoot. Anything else you want to talk about or say? I guess we've been on here for a while. <It's>
if there's anybody that wants to help build a program or offer their experiences on search and rescue and recovery, feel free to contact me. I mean, we'll more than welcome everybody and anybody's opinions and input. And I mean, it's something that I see would be good for the sport as a whole, and I mean, and it definitely puts us in a positive light when we're working with law enforcement to help a bad situation when we're giving up our time when we could be doing something else, and so that if we do ever have somebody that cross paths with law enforcement. And somebody's complained, maybe it's all it is a warning instead of
a ticket.
Something a little bit.
yeah, absolutely. And guys, if y'all want more information on, excuse me, like I said, on the search and rescue, go to the Texas Wingnuts, and there's a search and rescue, a nice little PowerPoint thing that was put together by Barry. And if you go to the just in that same article and stuff, you can actually go to Texas. How do you say the name again? Texas Equestria.
The organization here locally is TexasEquiSearch.org. TexasEquiSearch.org.
Okay. Couldn't get it out. Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry. And that is also on that underneath your PPG search rescue and recovery. Go ahead.
And we really right now. We operate under them. I mean, if they want us to go search a particular part of a particular search area. As long as we can safely do that, then we'll go and participate. But I know there's been times like, I'm afraid I can't do that, winds are too strong, or wrong time of day, thermal activity.
Yeah, which they understand all of that.
They know we got limitations, and they want to see all their people come back.
Volunteers in return.
It's very important that they always have a 100% head count at the end of the day.
Excellent. And don't forget to go to uswingnuts.com. That is your website. And looks like he's got a wide variety of equipment and wings and helmets, harnesses, anything you can think of as far as PPG. So,
If anybody wants to to know what's they've heard this or that, and about a piece of equipment, and I'll be more than happy to give the pros and cons of each piece of equipment, and because every piece of equipment out there, it's got its pluses and it's got its negatives, and the final person's got to say so. What's important to them and what's not important to them is their choice.
Well, all right. Well, thank you very much, Barry, for your time. I kept you on here over an hour. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, I guess folks are going to have to listen to a long episode.
I'm telling you. That's all right. If they're anything like me, when I was listening to some of the radio, like, man, they're done. You know? Daggone it. Well, thank you very much, like I said, again.
All right.
Well, there you go, guys. There's Barry for you. If you're like me, you've been on the big list, and you've seen how he's replied to some of the questions that people have asked. And I really wanted to talk to him, and I'm glad he I'd like to thank him for coming on and giving me time and a chance to talk to him about, well, we talked about a lot there. So I hope you enjoyed. Please go check out www.uswingnuts.com. That's his online store. A lot of different equipment. Wings, electronic gear, and if you have any questions, give him a call, and I'm sure he'll be more than happy to answer them for you. He'll get back to you as soon as he can. TX Wing Nuts, that's the group he actually flies with down there. It's www.txwingnuts.com. That's their website. If you are looking for that PowerPoint presentation we talked about, it is on there, Search and Rescue. Really nice. Just go check it out. It's a really cool. If you ever thought about putting something together like that, that's basically the information you need. Gives you a really good starting point in organizing a search and rescue in the area. So, and you also can go to the big list where he's actually started the search and recovery, I think it is, on the big list. I'll have to check and see, and I'll link to it in the show notes. So, once again, thank you for listening. This is Will Jones at Talking PPG Radio. Talk to you next time. Bye.